This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our topic this week is livestock sustainability. Our guest is Paul Meyer, CEO of Athian. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the Soy Checkoff. Athian's Paul Meyer is next. Wanted to take a moment and talk to soybean farmers. Nearly 500,000 of you are in the U.S. growing over 4 billion bushels of soybeans a year. And the Soy Checkoff is working hard to grow demand, innovating, testing, and showcasing new uses in new industries such as firefighting foam, tires, straws, shoes, or 1,000 other products. To learn more, visit unitedsoybean.org and keep on growing. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. One technology company is assisting livestock producers to market sustainable production practices to members of industry who want to improve their status toward climate change in the eyes of their customers. Paul Meyer, CEO of Athian, says they're continuing the mission of two major companies.
Look, Athian's been around for 2.5 years now. We started as a concept between a large animal health company, Elanco Animal Health, a company called High Alpha Innovation that does innovation work for large organizations that are looking to solve big problems. Both High Alpha and Elanco are based in Indianapolis. Elanco has been focused on how to tell the story of sustainability within the animal ag space, which is their focus. They're a large animal pharmaceutical company, and historically, they've sold feed additives and other products for producers, for farmers. In that work, they have taken a more focused approach to sustainability, where they've been looking for ways to essentially tell the story of how animal agriculture can be part of an overall solution that helps to solve the climate change challenge that we face as an industry. So the original ideation behind Athian was around how do you solve that problem? And it's, it really takes a combination of interventions that impact the greenhouse gas footprint of farmers. And then how do you find ways to fund those practice changes that will move the ball forward? And that's how they came up with some of the original ideas behind Athian as a company. And at the time they called it CattleWorks, and it was focused on, how do we build out a software tool that will help farmers to build a footprint of their operations based on data that's coming in from their on-farm software management system, and then help those farmers to identify areas where they could make improvements that would impact their greenhouse gas footprint. Essentially, Athian as a company, we are a purpose-driven organization. That is, our objective is to help the animal agriculture industry make a positive impact on climate change. We like to say that we're technology experts with farming in our genes, and we fundamentally believe in being good stewards of the economic and environmental health of farms and the communities surrounding them. In a nutshell, we use software to aggregate, certify, and fund greenhouse gas reduction plans throughout the entire livestock value chain to enable environmental sustainability for animal ag. So our objective is, how do we help the largest number of farmers possible make a significant impact on their own greenhouse gas footprint? And the short answer to that is that you have to have software. Software is great because it essentially leverages technology to take cost out of the process of implementing sustainable practices. And so we've started and we developed our initial platforms with large organizations, large farms, but because animal agriculture is made up of a very diverse supply chain, that is, you've got literally hundreds of thousands of producers out there that make up that supply chain, you need something that will scale up to the very large organizations, but also scale down, and software is the way to do that, to be able to work with even the smallest of producers.
Can the path to sustainability in the eyes of the consumer, is it the same path? Can it be the same path that leads to both productivity and sustainability in and working with dairy and beef cattle?
Specifically, my personal background is I've been in tech my entire career, but on my mom's side of the family, I came from three generations of cattle ranchers that are based there in the Southwest. And as a kid, I worked on the ranch. And what I, after a career in tech, when I started to learn about some of the challenges in animal ag, specifically around sustainability, it resonated with me because, working on the ranch as a kid, my grandfather was he was organic before organic was cool and was sustainable before sustainability was cool. I didn't realize it at the time, but the practices that they used to carve out a living in essentially the deserts of southern Utah, Nevada, Arizona, and New Mexico, that's dry farming at its best. But my grandfather, as a kid, I didn't realize what he was doing, but he had field crops that he would rotate every year. He had a small herd of livestock, of cattle, that we would herd from pasture to pasture because he was doing low-till, no-till before that was really even a thing. He was sequestering carbon in the field, and he was doing it because he couldn't afford the expense of fertilizers, so he would use the cattle to fertilize those fields, and then he would rotate those crops because that's what his ancestors did, and it's what worked to really produce to help produce the very best crops for the lowest amount of money. And he did it by the sweat of his brow, but he did it because he loved the land. It was a land that belonged in his family that he wanted to pass on to the next generation. He wanted to do the right thing for the land and to produce high quality crops and in the process have something get passed on to the next generation. And so I really see Athian's role as being the voice of the farmer in this process. Fundamentally, all of those measures that he took in his business was good for his business and good for the animals and the crops he was raising. But I think those same practices have an impact on sustainability because if you can essentially do what the dairy industry has done in the U.S., where the dairy industry has become significantly more efficient over the last 15 years, and today they are producing the same amount of milk or more milk with 30 to 40% fewer animals because they're able to be much significantly more efficient. So for the same amount of feed inputs, same amount of greenhouse gas outputs, you have significantly more product. It essentially decreases the greenhouse gas per liter or per gallon of milk that comes out the other end of the production.
So I want to rewind to January of 2024. And the headline read that Dairy Farmers of America purchases first verified carbon credits in the livestock inset marketplace. How did that headline come to be, and how did that affect Athian?
That's a great question. Look, we realized early on in the process that we had to start this this platform by reaching out to producers and to the co-ops that represent those producers. We started with dairy because the data is very good in dairy, and they do an excellent job of tracking all their inputs and outputs. And so it was a likely place to start. And rather than reaching out to literally hundreds of thousands of producers, we started by building relationships with the large dairy co-ops. And really, we were very deliberate in our strategy to partner with strategic investors that understood the value chain. And we leveraged those relationships. We've got five sort of core investors, two animal health companies, Elanco and DSM. But then we've got a company called Nutrient, which is a manure management company that is owned by the dairy industry, by DMI, DFA, Tillamook, and a basket of dairy co-ops. And then California Dairy CDI is also an investor. And so we aligned ourselves clearly with the dairy co-ops early in this process, and they're the ones that helped us to design a platform that would work well for their producers. And so in January of 2024, DFA made a strategic decision to buy the very first carbon insetting credits. And that really kicked off a conversation with offtake partners at the end of the value chain. So the large buyers of dairy and those are buyers like Nestle and Mars and Starbucks, all of those companies have set targets for greenhouse gas reductions within their supply chains, somewhere in the neighborhood of 30% decreases by 2030. And so they're all working hard to reach those goals that they've set. And so they were looking for ways to solve that problem. But really, DFA led the way by showing how you could actually track progress within your specific supply chain. And the reason that we sold those credits was it was a way to fund those on-farm practices. So every credit that gets sold, 75% of that, of the value of those credits goes back to the farm so that they can fund the sustainable practice change required to reach those objectives. And credits are merely a way of getting that done, and DFA really showed the way. The result this year is that by the end of 2024, we will have paid out almost $5 million to farmers to implement sustainable practice changes in 2024. And we're anticipating 4 to 5 times that kind of success in 2025. So really, DFA started the process, and now the companies at the end of the value chain are actively funding these projects, and we're enlisting an army of producers to participate in these projects.
So I don't want to sound cynical, but I think it's a fair question. Why are the food companies willing to make investments in sustainable practices from dairy and beef producers? How do we know that the practices that the farmers are implementing are actually delivering the results that are promised?
So really, there's two pieces to that question. The first one is, why are they interested in funding, and you know, what's driving their behavior? And I can tell you that the cynical part of me says that, you know, part of this is that some of these large food companies have investors like BlackRock and State Street, private equity firms that have set firm targets for the companies that they are invested in and that they work with. That's part of what's driving it. The other is that the corporate boards that run those organizations have made commitments, overall commitments to cut their greenhouse gas emissions. They're called science-based targets, and there's an international organization that drives that. And there's almost 1,000 large multinational companies that are part of the SBTI, or the Science-Based Targets Initiative process. And those goals that they make, essentially the SEC in the U.S. is holding companies' feet to the fire if they make those commitments, that they are essentially requiring those companies to report on their progress. So, and that's frankly where we come in. So the second half of this equation is, how do you do verification and validation that holds water so that you don't have accusations of greenwashing, or you don't have companies that are taking credit for dubious claims? And that's where we come in. Our role is to be an arm's length third party in this process. And so our bundle of services, we leverage software that pulls data from those on-farm systems. We have a complete protocol process that essentially vets the science behind any kind of intervention. And when I say intervention, what I mean is, in animal ag, there are a couple of measures that can impact your greenhouse gas footprint. And specifically, methane is the biggest greenhouse gas that is a part of both beef and dairy operations. And that methane comes from two sources. It's during the feeding process that methane is burped out during the rumination process. And then on the back end of the cow, it's the manure and manure management. It's the other source of methane. So about 40% of the overall footprint is enteric methane, or during the feed process, and 30% is manure methane. So the interventions we're talking about are feed additives that decrease the amount of methane that's emitted when that cow is digesting food. And then manure management techniques are the back end of that cow. And that includes things like liquid solid separators, composting. There's about a dozen different practices, all the way up to cap and flare and full-on dairy digesters that are designed to capture that methane and sometimes reuse it as a reusable fuel. but other times just to eliminate it so that it's, it doesn't get released into the atmosphere. And as it turns out, methane's about 80% more, burns 80% hotter than carbon. And so if you can effectively cut the methane emissions that animal agriculture contributes, then it has an outsized impact on overall temperature changes. And depending on who you talk to, animal agriculture through methane accounts for anywhere from 4 to 10% of the overall global greenhouse gas footprint. So it's a big number, and it has a big impact.
Listening to feed companies talking about those additives, they've been successful in reducing emissions. But a concern from the farmer is, would that additive be a detriment to the rate of gain? But I think what we've seen of those additives have actually improved the rate of gain. So the effort towards sustainability is helping to offset the cost of the feed additive. That's a full circle.
Some of the early feed additives were sold primarily based on the overall productivity gains that were attached to them. So there's one that's been around for almost 30 years called Rumensin that has roughly a 30%+ impact on output. And what we didn't realize at the time that Rumensin was developed was it also has about a 5% absolute impact on greenhouse gas emissions. So it's kind of an all-in-one solution that, can dramatically increase productivity while having an absolute impact and reducing greenhouse gas emissions. So some of our early credits were based on Rumensin as an intervention. But there's a new generation of interventions that doesn't have an efficiency claim attached to it. It's called a 3NOP intervention. The brand name is Bovaer. It was designed by DSM in Europe. It's been around. They've been testing it for almost 10 years now. But there's not a productivity claim attached to it, which is part of the reason that Athian exists, is that without that productivity gain, there's no way that a farmer could afford to purchase a feed additive that only cuts their greenhouse gas emissions. So what Athian's doing is that we're building out a validation and verification platform that also carves those credits up into metric tons of reduction and then pays farmers for their efforts. And in this case, we've designed the platform to pay that farmer once every 30 days, which is when their feed bill comes due. And when we sell those credits to the end of the value chain, we price them in a way that it covers the cost that the farmer would have to buy and implement that feed additive. And then they get about a 20% profit margin on top of that, so that they get a little bit of a payment for their effort as well. So we're essentially providing a new revenue stream to farmers to implement these feed additives, even without having a significant positive impact on their overall output and efficiency.
Let's talk about the difference between insetting and offsetting.
The way that we solve the problem of greenhouse gas emissions historically is through offset markets, and they were primarily designed for regulated products that, like automobiles and air travel, or other regulated industries, where companies essentially, because the environment is a closed-loop system, they would pay a farmer in the Amazon to reforest an acre of ground, and that forest was designed to suck carbon out of the atmosphere. So they could go ahead and just, keep producing greenhouse gas emissions, but they pay a farmer someplace else to suck that carbon out of the atmosphere and to offset their own footprint. By contrast, insetting is designed to make a change to the actual production process so that you avoid or eliminate the emissions in the production process. And the only way that insets work is you have to be able to prove that the practice change takes place within your specific supply chain. So if you are, you're Mars and you're buying your milk from a specific co-op in California, you have to be able to connect the dots all the way back to the farm to prove that you're actually making that change in your supply chain. And the service that we're providing is that we're connecting all those dots through the supply chain. We do the validation and verification using authorized third parties that are certified to do that work. And then we provide all the receipts to the end of the value chain to show one, that the practice change took place, two, the metric tons of reduction that they could claim against their targets, and then three, we show that it came from their supply chain or supply shed, so that they can effectively make those claims without being accused of greenwashing.
How many producers are participating in programs like this now, and how do you anticipate this figure growing?
Historically, these projects have been done on a one-off basis. So you may have upwards of 100 to 150 farms on a nationwide basis who have participated in projects like this over the last 10 years. What we've done is essentially built a platform that allows you to scale that out exponentially. So today we have around 250 farms that are participating in the platform, and it can be any number of practice changes that would be part of that, of those projects. We anticipate by the end of 2025 that we'll have more than 1,000 producers in the system. And the objective is to get that to tens of thousands over the next 3 to 5 years. So far, so good. That was actually one of the key questions that we had going into this is, could you build long-term demand for a solution or approach like this that is repeatable and scalable? The short answer is yes, that today we have more demand for these insetting credits than we have supply, and we're working quickly to meet those demands. I think eventually the answer here is a lot like with organic products, where in the early going there was a significant premium for organically raised foods, but that over time that cost has gone down as adoption has become more widespread. We see that same thing happening here, and ultimately what you'll see is much like what you saw with organic products, that the price of these interventions, if you can spread them across all products, then it could potentially be only pennies on the dollar for sustainability. And if you believe what some of the research companies that have looked at sustainability, they'll tell you that with each successive generation, as you move down to millennials and then to Gen Z and beyond, that the younger generations are putting a higher value on sustainably raised products, and that they are willing to pay a little bit more for those products. I think ultimately that's how you put the bill for this. In the short term, companies have essentially, they're leveraging internal funding sources to pay for these projects. But over the long term, we think it'll get rationalized into the price of those products over time. And that when you spread the cost like that, that it makes it less expensive on a product-by-product basis.
Also, an important question as we look toward close here, what can Washington do to assist either by taking action or by letting the marketplace evolve on its own?
We fundamentally believe that industry knows the best way to solve these problems given the correct incentives. We also, though, understand that government has a role to play, especially in the early going. So we've seen action from USDA through their regional conservation grants. They've provided funding sources that have helped start up some of these projects. But I think the industry is the very best way to ensure that there's an ecosystem that supports those interventions over the long term. So, there's definitely an opportunity for government to help fund these projects up front, but we should look to industry to fund those projects in perpetuity. And as long as you've got an ecosystem that you can establish based on that initial government investment, then you're going to get the most efficient deployment of those scarce resources by leveraging the experts in the market that know how to solve these problems.
Well, Powell Meyer, it's exciting to hear how your company is helping producers monetize their effort toward sustainability and toward productivity and to move us to an overall better environment. Thank you for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. And, Paul, it's Open Mic, and today you've got the last word.
Hey, look, thank you. Look, we appreciate the story. You can tell that we're passionate about the work that we're doing. We have a keen appreciation for the role that we have as stewards of the environment. And we feel fortunate to work with some of the best people in the world, and that is the farmers that feed us. Anything that we can do to help the consumers in the U.S. to get in touch with the sources of the food that they eat and have an appreciation for the work that those farmers do, that's what drives us every day. And our ultimate goal is to have a positive impact on this environment so that we can leave it in a better shape than for our children and our posterity going forward. So thank you for the opportunity, and thanks for giving us the opportunity to tell the Athian story.
Our thanks to Paul Meyer, CEO of Athian, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the Soy Checkoff. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nelling.